You're listening to NBC Sports Radio, and this is Pro Football Talk Live with Mike Florio. And we're coming at you live from the Super Bowl's Radio Row in Phoenix, Arizona. Now, here's your host, Mike Florio.
I'm here so I won't get fined. 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 I'm just here so I won't get fined.
Hey, I'm here so I won't get fined.
I'm just here so I won't get fined. Hey, I'm just here so I won't get fined. I'm just here so I won't get fined. I'm just here so I won't get fined. Hey, I'm just here so I won't get fined. Hey, I'm just here so I won't get fined. I'm just here so I won't get fined. I'm just here so I won't get fined.
Welcome to this Wednesday edition of PFT Live on NBC Sports Radio. I'm here so I will get paid. Marshawn Lynch repeated nearly 30 times yesterday that line, I'm here so I won't get fined. And the NFL has been pretty good about not finding him when he shows up and speaks, even if it's unresponsive, even if it's yeah to every question, regardless of whether the question calls for a yeah or no, or if he says nope or maybe or whatever. But now there's a suggestion that Marshawn Lynch's performance at Media Day on Tuesday could nevertheless get him fined, not because of what he said, but because of what he wore. Adam Schefter of ESPN reports that that hat Marshawn Lynch was wearing, the Beast Mode hat, not an official NFL, Nike, or other licensed apparel, that could get Lynch nailed for a significant amount of money. Think back to Super Bowl 41. Brian Urlacher showed up with a Vitamin Water hat on back at a time when Vitamin Water wasn't really well known. $100,000 fine for Brian Urlacher at the time. So 8 years later, what's it going to be for Marshawn Lynch? And will it be influenced by his performance? I don't think the NFL wants to fine him for showing up and talking, even though he's not responding to questions. I don't think the league wants to go down that path because it ends up creating a separate distraction and maybe encourages other players to do the same thing and just makes more of a us against him fight. But if you're going to market products, and apparently that specific product is sold out on the website where it's being marketed, you're going to end up at odds with the NFL because the NFL is going to take dramatic steps to protect its relationships with its sponsors. It should have been an officially licensed hat that Lynch was wearing, as he said over and over again, I'm here so I won't get fined. And it should have been that hat that people were flocking to buy on Tuesday, not a personal Beast Mode hat. So it may seem a little petty on the surface, but this is about the NFL protecting the people who help pour millions of dollars into the vault and the coffers and the big giant piles of gold coins that they swim in when no one's paying attention or when people are. Either way, that was the big headline from Tuesday. And again, did I mention this is PFT Live on NBC Sports Radio? We are here at Radio Row, Phoenix Convention Center, a great lineup of guests today, but I'll get to that in a moment. Two guys that won't be on the program today or probably anytime this week, Bill Belichick and Pete Carroll. Some interesting stuff yesterday from Bill Belichick about Pete Carroll. On the surface, high praise of Pete Carroll. Lurking beneath, maybe a little Jedi mind trick that Bill Belichick is hatching against Pete Carroll. Listen carefully.
Well, I think Coach Carroll will tell you that their defense is pretty much the defense that he learned and coached in 1977 in Arkansas. I'd say they've gone up against everything they can go up against. Great quarterbacks, great receivers, great running games, great offensive lines. And they've always been good.
He's running the same defense that he was running at Arkansas in 1977. Translation, I know what you do, Pete. I know how you do it. I've been watching you, Pete, for 38 years. I'm going to figure out how to beat you, Pete, unless you disguise some things, unless you change some things. It's not going to be enough to put the Legion of Boom out there on the field and say, go do your thing. You're going to have to actually put together a game plan. You're going to have to disguise pre-snap what you're doing. You're going to have to think about what I may be doing based on all the film I've studied about this defense that I know you've been running since 1977. So will that get in Pete Carroll's brain? Will he spend time trying to complicate things? He likes to keep it simple. And it's a very basic strategy. We just put our best guys out on the field. and we let them do their thing. Today, Wednesday, they'll go first team offense against first team defense. No scout team. They don't care about scout team. They want to compete. They want the cream to rise to the top, and they want to keep it there. They'll go their offense against their defense. And by doing that, they'll be ready to face any offense and any defense. At least that's the theory. It's going to be tested to the limit against the Patriots. And when Bill Belichick says, I've been watching Pete Carroll since 1977. Oh, he's been watching Pete Carroll since 1977. And he's ready to take on Pete Carroll and the Seattle Seahawks come Sunday. Another guy that's been watching the Patriots for a long time and got to see them up close when they won their first Super Bowl back in early 2002, Super Bowl 36, Kurt Warner. He had some interesting remarks about the lingering concern that there may have been something fishy that happened at Super Bowl 36. Here's Kurt Warner on KJR Radio in Seattle from yesterday.
Was there any advantage they gained in any game, not just our Super Bowl game, but maybe a game before that to get to the Super Bowl? I mean, all those things enter your mind. And it's not because I'm bitter. It's not because I say they cheated, because I have no idea. But it adds a sliver of doubt, which I think is unfair to everybody. It's unfair to them and their legacy. It's unfair to me and my legacy, because I don't want to have to wonder, well, did they beat me fair and square, or was there something extra? And that's the unfortunate part that I don't think you'll ever get over, because you know something was done outside the rules. I have no idea how it helped them. I don't know if it gave them an advantage on one play that turned into an interception or a touchdown, or it gave them no advantage. I don't know. We're never going to know, but it's unfortunate that I even have to consider it.
Well, that's a great take from Kurt Warner, and a very diplomatic, well-reasoned, doesn't sound like sour grapes. Marty Herney, the former Panthers GM, was criticized relentlessly for his comments from last week about the culture of cheating, and he wonders whether or not there was anything untoward that may have allowed the Patriots to beat the Panthers by only 3 points a decade ago. Actually, 11 years ago. But the way Kurt Warner put it, it's not fair to anybody that this is out there. It's not fair to the team that lost. It's not fair to the team that won. It's not fair to the sport that these questions are out there. And specifically as it relates to the Rams, that goes directly to the story from the Boston Herald that came out 2 days before Super Bowl 42, as the then 18-0 Patriots were getting ready to take on the Giants, a game in which the Patriots were heavily favored. 2 days before that game, the Herald reported that a Patriots employee had videotaped the Rams' walkthrough practice before Super Bowl 36, created a huge distraction for the Patriots. Bill Belichick, the head coach, spent hours on Saturday, the day before the game, dealing with league office employees, answering questions, etc. Now, that report was later retracted with a front-page story in the Boston Herald, but the damage was done. The questions remain, and between Spygate and Deflategate and the retracted report about the taped walkthrough, there's enough out there to cause people to just wonder, what's there that we don't know about? What other potential blemishes? What other potential unfair advantages? And the other side of that coin, a lot of people do the same thing. And that's the one thing we can't lose sight of. This isn't picking on the Patriots. There is a culture in the NFL and in all competitive sports of doing whatever you have to do to get an edge. And people get caught cheating from time to time. And it's safe to say that the people who get caught cheating aren't the only cheaters. There are some who are getting away with it. There are some we will never know about. And those are the people who are just cheating better than others. And if Eric Mangini, then the head coach of the Jets in 2007, hadn't been the Patriots' defensive coordinator, Spygate would have never happened. And that's where the arrogance of the cheater becomes part of the problem, because the Patriots were warned by Mangini to knock it off, and they didn't. They were brazen about it. They got caught. And that was the thing that has unlocked what's now lasted for 7+ years, this uncertainty over whether and to what extent any of the Patriots' championships were tainted. And this was supposed to be the year that they would get a fully untainted Super Bowl win if they defeat the Seahawks. Now that asterisk is still floating around. Now there are people who believe that there was something that shouldn't have happened, and with Deflategate, who knows? And we won't know before Sunday. And the big question is, how can the Patriots take that and possibly turn it into a positive, use it as motivation, use it as a way to foster an us-against-the-world mentality, and use that defiance when it's time to play against the Seattle Seahawks on Sunday? 4 days to go until the game, and we've got nearly 3 full hours left of PFT Live on NBC Sports Radio. What a guest list today. My goodness, I'm not worthy of some of these guys. LaDainian Tomlinson coming up next. Greg Cosell is going to be on the program later to talk about some of the film study going into this game. Blake Bortles, the Jaguars quarterback. Hines Ward, 2-time Super Bowl champion. Former NFL Super Bowl MVP. My goodness. Adrian Wilson's going to stop by. Big day. Jay Glazer's supposed to come by. I wonder what I'll talk to Jay Glazer about. I wonder how long it takes him to go to the bathroom. I have a feeling that'll come up because he's the guy that blew the lid off of Deflategate on Monday with the report that there is a 90-second break. We added the 90 seconds. He had the first report that there's video of an employee going into a separate area, which turned out to be a bathroom. Anyway, the point is, we'll probably talk to Jay about that when Jay joins the program. A lot of great stuff to get to. Stick around. We'll be right back. This is PFT Live on NBC Sports Radio.
We're back to Pro Football Talk Live with Mike Florio, and we're live from the Super Bowl's Radio Row in Phoenix, Arizona. This is NBC Sports Radio, where every day is game day. Now, here's Mike Florio.
Pro Football Talk Live on NBC Sports Radio is brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. When your battery loses its power, stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Pick up a SuperStart battery that's an exact fit for your vehicle. O'Reilly Auto Parts has a reliable, hardworking SuperStart battery you can count on. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Next guest is a guy that the San Diego Chargers counted on for a long time. Fantasy football owners counted on him for a long time, too. The great LaDainian Tomlinson, future Hall of Famer. The last running back Hall of Famer, potentially, in the NFL.
I don't, you know, Mike, it's kind of, it's almost taboo to talk about it, you know.
About you getting in or about?
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
You're allowed to talk about
it. Well, not really. I mean, it's kind of one of those things that if the voters hearing you talking about it, it's like you're trying to pump yourself up or, you know, trying to get extra votes. And so what I've been told by other Hall of Famers is keep your mouth shut about it and let others talk about it.
Well, I'll talk about it then. LaDainian Tomlinson will be in the Hall of Fame in 2 years. I don't have a vote, but a guy who works for me does. I can just tell him to vote for you. So how's it been going for you since you've retired? You're not really retired, though, but you're retired from football.
Right, not really retired. Obviously doing things at NFL Network. But I'm here actually promoting Tostitos, which is the official chip of the National Football League. But I'm here promoting Tostitos Party Boulevard, which is a massive party that spans two blocks on Super Bowl Central. So I know you remember, Mike, the backyard games like cornhole and things like dunk tank. Imagine that being expanded two blocks. For all the fans out there, they need to go check this out.
Are you getting in the dunk tank?
I am, yes. Tomorrow I'm going to run the course, and then again on Saturday.
Good. Well, if I had any aim, I'd come out and throw a beanbag at the dunk tank and try to put you down in there. I can't do it because my toupee would come off. We're here with LaDainian Tomlinson, former NFL running back, NFL MVP back in 2006, Walter Payton Man of the Year, Offensive Player of the Year. We can go on and on and on. What do you think about the running back position now in the NFL? Because there aren't many or any LaDainian Tomlinsons today.
I think it has been devalued a little bit, particularly because the evolution of the passing game. And I think you really have to look at college football and what's going on in college football today. Teams are doing more of a spread formation, running back, you're using multiple running backs. And I believe, you know, nowadays the best running back, they're playing wide receiver. They used to play running back, but nowadays they go into the wide receiver position because they know there's a lot of value at the wide receiver position, but they're going to get the football.
Yeah, and guys like Ben Tate, who at last check was signed by the Steelers just for one game, he said, if I had to do it all over again, I'd be a safety. And do you think that'll happen, though? Younger players will look at what's happening in the NFL and say, maybe I should play a different position if I'm going to do this, if I have the athletic ability to do something other than be a running back?
Yes, I think so, particularly if you have the parents that are involved. For example, you know, I have a son. And he's 4 years old, but as he grows up and he wants to be involved in football, I'm going to steer him toward, you know, the wide receiver position, the quarterback position. And if not that, then, you know, cornerback. So the running back position, I don't know if it ever will return to the days that you and I are used to, where there was one running back that was featured. But I still believe that when you have a special running back, he's still going to add value to your team. You're still going to draft that guy in the first round, and he still possibly could demand value in the free agency market.
He's LaDainian Tomlinson, former NFL MVP, now with NFL Network, and also here today on behalf of Tostitos. You mentioned your son, and it's a popular topic now. Will you let a child play football? My son just finished his high school career, and I did exhale deeply because I didn't have to worry about him getting hurt anymore. You've got no qualms about letting your son play?
Well, here's the thing. I think you have to kind of pay attention to the way that your child is developing. I believe that a young kid, a young man should not play football until they're right around 13, 14 years old, especially with 7-on-7 flag football. You can learn the fundamentals of the game at an early age. You don't have to start tackling at 8 years old as I did. And so I really believe you can still develop into a great football player starting your tackling career at 13 or 14.
And that's a great point. Wouldn't it be smart for the NFL to start ensuring that in communities throughout the United States and really beyond, flag football, non-contact football at young ages, so parents who have concerns about their children getting injured can say, here's a form of football you can play, you can learn the sport, and then when you're old enough, you can put on a helmet.
Absolutely. I think that's the best way to go, because no one knows how many hits a particular player has in them. You just don't know that. And so why not, hold off being tackled and, possibly breaking bones and having surgery and all those type of things that could happen playing football.
We're here with LaDainian Tomlinson, former NFL MVP, on PFT Live and NBC Sports Radio. Speaking of surgeries, how many years did you play football?
11.
But college and high school altogether and every level?
Years.
You never had a surgery?
Never had a surgery.
What do you attribute that to?
Good
genes, luck,
well,
what?
A little bit of everything. Good genes, and I think, my ability to continue to work on my body, even in the off season. Mike, I stayed in shape. I tried to never get out of shape. I made sure I continued to do massages and see a chiropractor and stretching. I got that from Barry Sanders. Barry Sanders told me a long time ago, in order to stay healthy, you have to do more stretching. And I listened to him along with Emmitt Smith. And so all of those things, along with some luck, obviously, I was able to stay healthy.
What was the greatest moment for you personally in your NFL career?
Man, that's a good one. Well, I would say our first division championship, for one, because remember, 1-15, the Chargers before I got there. My first year we won 5 games, I think. To go from that to winning the division for the first time with a young team, that was special. Probably the best individual moment, it had to be the touchdown record. It was a special moment. Not only for me, but my teammates wanted that record. And I think that was displayed when they healed.
I remember the reaction. I remember the reaction. You're absolutely right. We're wrapping up with LaDainian Tomlinson, former NFL MVP, here on behalf of Tostitos. You play with a lot of quarterbacks. Who's the best quarterback you played with?
I think it's Drew Brees. The cerebralness that he has, man, in order to – early on in his career, Drew struggled a little bit. He second-guessed himself a lot. But then I seen him turn the corner right at the end, probably 2 or 3 years before he left San Diego, because he worked on it, and he really tried to get – really wanted to get better. Even in the offseason, he worked to get better. And just, the obvious – the attributes that he possessed, the arm, the, intelligence, but his competitiveness. You can't measure that, Mike, and that's one of the things that I will always remember about Drew Brees.
How long did it take you to buy into the switch from Drew Brees to Phillip Rivers?
It didn't take very long because, anyone that had eyeballs can see the potential in Phillip Rivers. Big, strong quarterback, standing in the pocket that can throw every route that you need. Very smart, the son of a coach. And so we knew we had a special guy in Phillip Rivers as well. And so it didn't take very long.
How much do you miss playing football?
Honestly, I don't miss it at all. I really don't because, football takes a lot. It takes so much out of you mentally and physically. And here's the thing. The wins, you don't enjoy them as long. But the losses just hurt so much more.
I got to run, but I appreciate it. It's been great talking to you. We wish you all the best. We'll be back with more PFT Live on NBC Sports Radio.
Welcome back to Pro Football Talk Live. We're broadcasting from Arizona, home of Super Bowl 49, on NBC Sports Radio. Now, live from Radio Row, it's Mike Florio.
For those of you watching this program on ProFootballTalk.com, video and audio, that is a shot of Super Bowl Central, home of the Roman numerals XLIX. 49 is the real number, and the real thing is here with us. Greg Cosell, the senior producer at NFL Films and executive producer of NFL Matchup, the longest-running football studio show
in television history. We're proud of that. 30 years.
Congratulations.
30 years, so.
And it's a great show. Sal Palantonio, Merrill Hodge, Ron Jaworski breaking down the film. And that's why we have you on here every year, because you can help us understand what the film shows. So this matchup, and finally we are talking about
right.
instead of the air pressure of footballs, we're talking about what they'll do with
the footballs.
I don't
know anything about that anyway.
Yeah. What have you seen? What stands out as you study the film?
Well, I guess what I'm most fascinated with is how Bill Belichick will choose to play the read option. Because they've been a high percentage man-to-man team the last 10-11 weeks. And I think when you play a lot of man coverage, you obviously get an extra defender in the box area. But when you play the read option, if you want to prevent Mike Russell Wilson from running, you can prevent that. You can define the read for Russell Wilson. You can make him hand the ball to Marshawn Lynch. And there are teams that have done that this year and have been very successful kind of minimizing the Seahawks' run game. Carolina's done that a couple of times. They did a really good job. And I can see Bill Belichick, and we know the way he thinks, all this week saying, do your job, do your job, do your job. Because the key with that is you can't get caught up in all the backfield action, because then their pass game works off that a little bit. And if one guy takes a misstep, let's say you're playing the tight end man-to-man, and it's, you know, let's say it's Patrick Chung, and he takes one misstep because he thinks he's going to go make a play in the backfield, then all of a sudden Luke Wilson gets behind him, and that's the way they get their big plays. They don't really get their big plays the way most teams do in the pass game, because it's not a real sophisticated pass game.
We're here with Greg Cosell, senior producer at NFL Films, executive producer of the NFL Matchup Show. We always hear Bill Belichick will take away what the opposing offense does best.
Right.
So what do you try to take away from the Seattle offense if you're Bill Belichick?
Well, as I said, I think what you have to do, and there's two parts to
this. Is it Marshawn Lynch or is it Russell Wilson?
It's two parts to this. It's what you do in normal down and distance situations and then what you do in long yardage. And in normal down and distance where the read option is a factor, to me, I would take away Russell Wilson and make him hand the ball off into the interior of your defense. You have a much better chance of defending Marshawn Lynch in the interior of your defense than if you're compromised on the perimeter and Russell Wilson gets on the perimeter with the read option. Because then he can run for 20 yards before it even happens. Whereas on the inside, you've got more bodies. Okay. Then in long yardage, then what you have to be aware about, is what I call Wilson's structured improvisation. He's not a guy who moves and then tries to figure it out. He moves with a clear purpose every time. And I think what you'll see there is you'll see spying, you'll see Jamie Collins, because what you have to do with Wilson is make sure when he moves laterally. If he starts moving forward, then he compromises your defense and he'll run for a lot of yards in long yardage situations.
He's Greg Cosell, senior producer at NFL Films, executive producer of the NFL Matchup Show on ESPN. Now, when the Patriots have the football, and we see this from Bill Belichick week in and week out, if he can run, he'll run.
Right.
If he can pass, he'll pass.
Yeah.
He'll structure that game plan to suit what he thinks he can do. What do you think he should do against the Seattle defense?
That, to me, is the biggest question of this Super Bowl, because they're not a team that has a specific identity that they do every week. And do they line up with LeGarrette Blount and you know, power football, two tight ends, six offensive linemen? Do they make it a Shane Vereen game and spread it out a little more and put the ball in Brady's hands and say, you drop back 40 times? I think they'll do both. I think they'll have, because of Brady's brilliance and the fact that Belichick has a lot of smart players, I think they'll have three or four game plans. And I think that they'll test and search and investigate and research how Seattle's going to play. Seattle may just sit in cover three zone and say, hey, you're going to have to come to us. If you want to throw four-yard passes, we'll tackle you, and you're going to have to go 13 or 14 plays to score touchdowns, not field goals, and we don't think you can do that against our defense. So I'm so anxious, and I don't have the answer for this. I'm so anxious to see what Belichick's going to do here, because I think that you could see a Shane Vereen game. You could see what San Diego did week two. You remember that game where Rivers had an unbelievable game, and they used Danny Woodhead, they used Antonio Gates, they had certain formations where they were able to get one-on-one matchups for both those guys. Maybe you could see that.
Yeah, turn those safeties not into guys who can hit, but guys who have to cover.
Play more in space.
Especially with Earl Thomas having that shoulder injury.
Right.
He's wearing a harness. He's going to have trouble getting his arms over his head. But the big guy on defense all year long has been Richard Sherman. The question of whether you throw at Richard Sherman or not, what do you think Belichick will do?
Well, at the end of the day, I think what you're going to see is the Patriots, if they're going to get some man, and the Seahawks do have man concepts built into their zone, the Patriots are not a team that's just going to line up with their receivers on the outside and try to win one-on-one matchups. They don't play like that anyway. They don't really have those receivers. LaFell can win some on the inside, and in fact, Sherman is beatable on quick slants. He tends to turn his back. Now, those are 9-yard gains, 10-yard gains. They're not 30-yard plays, but you're going to have to make those plays and consistently make those plays to move the chains. I personally believe that Sherman and Maxwell, even though they're not pure man corners, they allow the Seahawks to do what they do. They allow Chancellor to play between the numbers. They allow K.J. Wright and Bobby Wagner to do what they do. Because if those guys couldn't hold up on the outside, then you would have to help them on the outside. And then Cam Chancellor couldn't be Cam Chancellor.
He's Greg Cosell, senior producer at NFL Films, executive producer of the NFL Matchup Show on ESPN. Rob Gronkowski, I think, is an X factor here.
Yeah.
Because the last few years, he hasn't been healthy when the Patriots have been in position to make something happen. He had the ankle problem 3 years ago against the Giants. How do you see the Seahawks trying to neutralize him?
Well, that's a great question, because what the Patriots have done this year, Mike, is they've used Gronkowski more as a movable chess piece kind of player. And I think he's a key player in how they research the Seahawks defense early. They'll line him up split. They'll line him up in the slot. They might line him up initially in the backfield, which they've done at times this year. They're going to see how Seattle reacts to that. Now, if Seattle just sits in cover three, then it becomes in some ways a moot point, because they'll just sit in their foundational cover three. But they might see, hey, maybe they put him split out and maybe they send KJ Wright out with him. And then the Patriots might think, you know what? That's pretty good. We like that.
How much of the testing that happens early on do you think will be testing Richard Sherman's elbow? We saw the Packers not go at that elbow when he was clearly impaired.
Right, right.
Will they, even if it's just running the ball his way, force him to make a tackle?
Right. That's a good point. They might see, you know, maybe that's where LeGarrette Blount comes in. Maybe they'll do some outside zone concepts and see if they can force Sherman to be involved as a run defender. Although I don't think that's a big factor in the game, in all honesty. I don't think this game will be won or lost based on how well Richard Sherman tackles or doesn't tackle.
Do you think at some level the Patriots are going to be tempted to throw more just to show that they can throw fully inflated footballs and that this deflate stuff is just a bunch of nonsense?
I don't think that would be the reason they would do it, but I think I could be dead wrong, but I'm leaning toward this being more of a Brady game in terms of number of dropbacks. Now, when I say that, I don't think they're going to drop him back 50 times, but I don't think they're going to line up as their foundational approach with two tight ends, 6-0 line. There'll be some of that. They'll be groping, but I think they're going to end up putting this scheme in the hands of Brady. He gets the ball out quick. Their pass game's not built on deep drops. They're going to count on Brady's smarts beating the pass rush, which they've done all year because it's not a great O-line, but that's the way they've played all year. I just feel like they're going to have to sustain offense throwing it more than running it.
Last minute or two with Greg Cosell, senior producer at NFL Films, executive producer of the NFL Matchup Show. Any weaknesses for either team that really stand out when you look at the film? Glaring stuff that
glaring,
you worried about this?
I wouldn't say glaring. I think both teams at times are susceptible to the run game with the interior of their defense. Now, when I say that, like I said, it's not glaring where you go, oh, my God, they're just going to run the ball down their throats. But I think there's times, you know, with Meebane being out all year, with Jordan Hill being out all year, or since whenever he's been out, I think that their depth inside at D-tackle is clearly less. And I think the Patriots at times can struggle with that as well. So I think that will be tested clearly by Seattle against New England's defense. And I think New England will test it, yes.
Well, it's great stuff. It's only 4 days away, but I'm even more ready than I was after hearing you explain some of that stuff. We appreciate some of your time, Greg. Thanks for stopping
Mike,
by.
Mike, thanks so much. I really appreciate
there
it.
Here he is, Greg Cosell, senior producer at NFL Films, executive producer of the NFL Matchup Show on ESPN. We'll be back with Blake Bortles, Jaguars quarterback, PFT Live on NBC Sports Radio.
You're listening to a special Super Bowl broadcast of Pro Football Talk Live. Live from Radio Row on NBC Sports Radio. Now, back to your host, Mike Florio.
Pro Football Talk Live on NBC Sports Radio is built by the Home Depot. Let's do an easy update at the Home Depot. You can get a lot more bathroom for your buck with top brand names like Home Decorators Collection, Kohler, and Glacier Bay. The Home Depot also offers buy online, pick up in store. Just place your order online or through the Home Depot iPhone or Android apps. Then come pick up your vanity ready and paid. Visit HomeDepot.com/bath for details. More saving, more doing. That's the power of the Home Depot. All right. Pleasure to be joined now by the third overall pick in the 2014 draft, starting quarterback of the Jacksonville Jaguars. And America wants to know, Blake Bortles, have you been in the pool yet at the stadium?
No, I haven't. Thanks for having me. But definitely something on the bucket list that I got to do.
Will you at some point, like let's say you throw a game-winning touchdown pass, will you run up and jump in the pool in full pads?
I thought about, you know, like running one in and throwing the ball up there to somebody in the pool. But, I mean, I think there could definitely be a big game win pool celebration.
Okay, well, we're looking forward to that. And the fans there, I mean, you guys have had your struggles, and you've only been part of it for 1 year. It's amazing how engaged the fans are and how supportive they are, because in a lot of other cities, they'd have checked out.
Yeah, it definitely is. They're unbelievable. You know, they're there through thick and thin, you know, regardless of the record. They come and they support, and they're awesome. And you know, we want to, you know, Gus Bradley talks about it all the time, connecting to the following and going out and being a big part of the community. And, you know, that's part of the reason why, you know, they stand behind us and believe in us.
We're here with Blake Bortles, Jaguars quarterback on PFT Live. What's one thing that you learned as a rookie that you wish you would have known before the season started?
One thing that I learned as a rookie, there's a ton. You know, I think I'd say just probably the attention to detail. You know, I kind of went into it blind, never done it before. You know, I've never played in the NFL, didn't know a whole lot of people that did, so didn't have a lot to talk to. But, I mean, I think the fact that every single play, every single defense, every single scheme, there's so much little intricacies that you have to pay attention to and be sharp and be on. And it's you know, it's not really a burden. It's your job. So, you know, it comes with the territory. And if you love to do, there's nothing better.
And now you've got the Microsoft Surface available on the sidelines to help with that attention to detail. Explain how that has made it easier for you to make adjustments during a game.
Yeah, it's been awesome. You know, I use the Surface on and off the field and everything I do. And to have it, it's kind of weird because, it's you know, that's not a place for technology to be sitting there on the bench looking at a Surface. But, it, I mean, it's so much faster than going through the notebook, and you're able to zoom in and scan through and move stuff around and draw, and it just makes it way more efficient.
And now they're talking about actually allowing teams to view film during the game on the Surface. Is that something you're looking forward to?
You know, I think definitely as a quarterback, that's an advantage. To be able to watch film of the series after you just went through it would definitely, I think, change the game and be an advantage to the offense.
An unfair advantage to the offense,
maybe? An unfair
maybe?
Advantage, I think.
More unfair than a deflated football?
Yeah, could be a bigger impact.
He's Blake Bortles of the Jacksonville Jaguars. While we're on that topic, any specific treatment or inflation you prefer for the footballs you throw?
No, I've never paid attention to it until about 2 weeks ago.
But quarterbacks like the ball to feel a certain way.
Yeah, I think everybody does. You know, they brush it and rub it down and do all that stuff until you break it in until you like it. But I mean, I think I've never really thought about it. I kind of just go out there and whatever balls they throw me, that's the balls I throw.
Anything specific, though, that you look for? Doug Flutie told me that he always liked that second lace to be higher because that's where he'd lock his finger in. Anything like that that
no,
you look for?
No, it's kind of just throw me a ball, and that's the one I'll go play with.
He's Blake Bortles of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Okay, the Jaguars are in the AFC South, not the strongest division right now in the NFL. What needs to happen in 2015 if your team's going to reach the top of the division?
You know, I think we gotta have a lot of improvements. We gotta go out. We gotta get better this offseason. You know, guys on the roam. We're gonna get guys together and work together. But I mean, I'm excited for it. I'm excited for the opportunity and the guys that we have in the locker room to come back and get after it. And you know, I know they're all excited. And you know, offensively, it comes down to execution. It's something that we definitely lacked. And you know, I was obviously a big part of that. So there's a lot of improvements that need to take place.
The reduced off-season workouts make it important to get together, and you mentioned you're going to get together. Do you have a timetable in mind? Because that seems to be one of the things that helps an offense get better, taking advantage
right.
of the downtime.
Yeah, definitely. It's not, you know, set, but towards the end of February, we're getting everybody, you know, all the pass catchers and quarterbacks out, you know, together in order to, you know, kind of just stay familiar with each other, and, you know, we'll be able to talk about concepts and things that we do, you know, kind of keep everybody a little sharp.
Where are you going to go?
It'll be out in California somewhere.
Well, aren't they supposed to come to you? Where do you live?
Well, I'm going out there. I'm headed out there after
this. You're the quarterback. They come to you.
No, I'm going out there to train, so that's where I'll be.
How long are you going to be training out there?
I'll be out there till probably the end of March.
What kind of stuff are you going to do?
A lot of working out and stretching and trying to get the body right and better, and then obviously a ton of both mental and physical, you know, quarterbacking.
And some experimentation with footballs inflated to various PSIs. Yeah. Now that it's an issue, you may as well
experiment.
That's right.
Check it out.
He's Blake Bortles, Jacksonville Jaguars quarterback. You do have a great coach in Gus Bradley. How is he able to keep you guys focused week in and week out, even when there's adversity?
Right. He's unbelievable. The environment that that him and Dave Caldwell have created there is really, it's unparalleled. It's the first team I've been on, so obviously I don't know or have anything to compare it to. But when you see, when you hear guys talking about other places, it's not like what we have in Jacksonville. It is, it's a stress-free environment where guys have a blast. Everybody works their tail off, but we have a good time doing it.
How big of a challenge is it going to be with a new offensive coordinator?
I think it's an opportunity. It's another opportunity. Kind of look at it as, okay, well, you just learned an offense, and there's another guy coming in that's going to give you his offense. So go learn it and broaden your football knowledge and go get after it. So I look at it and, can't wait.
How are you going to be able to work out with the pass catchers? You're not going to have a playbook, are you?
Right.
Or can you get one?
It could be different. I don't know. I don't want to say anything wrong. I don't know the rules, so I'm not going to say anything. If I'm allowed to get a playbook, I will get one as soon as possible.
Smart. And I'd never try to lead you into that. It just kind of popped into my head. If you got a new offensive coordinator, what are you going to do?
Yeah, and that's
just,
the
thing. You go deep, you go short, and we'll just throw the ball around.
Exactly. So we'll go, a lot of stuff similar. You just call it different things. So we'll be able to go out and work on some of that stuff and then figure out whether then or later what we're going to call it.
All right, well, great stuff. I got to run. Appreciate you coming on, and good luck, and we look forward to talking to you down the road.
Thank
He's Blake Bortles,
me.
Jacksonville Jaguars. We'll be back with Hines Ward. This is PFT Live on NBC Sports Radio.
You're listening to NBC Sports Radio, and this is Pro Football Talk Live with Mike Florio. And we're coming at you live from the Super Bowl's Radio Row in Phoenix, Arizona. Now, here's your host, Mike Florio.
There they are, the Roman numerals. If you're watching this program on ProFootballTalk.com, the simulcast XLIX, PFT Live and NBC Sports Radio, joining us now, the MVP of Super Bowl XL. Hines Ward, former Steelers receiver. Can you believe it's been 9 years?
Crazy. 9 years. It's flown by, man. I feel old. I really do.
You are old.
I am old.
But I'm older than you. That makes it even worse.
Yeah, correct. I'm younger than you.
How long have you been retired?
Three years. This is my third year now.
How much do you miss it?
I don't miss it at all, man. I've gotten everything I wanted out of football. I've been a Pro Bowl player. I've played in three Super Bowls, won two, named Super Bowl MVP. So, I'm very blessed to play 14 years for a great organization, and I've gotten everything I wanted out of football. I'm signed on with NBC up here. I'm your teammate now, so life is good, man.
People still wear the 86 jerseys. I live in Steelers country, and everywhere you go, somebody's got on an 86 jersey, even some bum on the side of the road sitting on a guardrail wearing an 86 jersey. I want to take a picture of that guy and send it to you.
Yeah, that means I did something right in Pittsburgh.
Now, which ring do you wear?
This is the 43 ring. Why do I wear it? Because I designed it. Jerome Bettis designed a Super Bowl 40 ring, but his ring was a little small. I always told Mr. Rooney, when you have a Super Bowl ring, and I don't wear it often.
You could cook breakfast.
Yes.
Show that. You could make eggs here, bacon here, throw potatoes in there.
But it has to be a ring. When you walk into the building, you get instant credibility. Everybody knows that you're a champion. So that's the reason why I wear the ring. And this is significant because it shows the six Super Bowls. So you see the big six nuggets that are three on both sides. But it's a great ring. I only wear it during Super Bowl week.
But 40 means more to you because you were MVP.
Correct. But
where do you keep that one? Where's that one?
I got it in the room. I didn't want to come out here and be flossing.
Where you stand?
I can't tell you that. Now you got the maids going and searching my
bags. I wouldn't leave it in there with the maids.
No. It's there with my wife.
You need a camera in there. He's Hines Ward, Super Bowl MVP, longtime member of the Pittsburgh Steelers. How important was it for you to play for only one team?
You know what? It's rare nowadays. I still felt like I could have played a couple more years, but, why? I felt like I proved myself at such a level of I didn't have to go to another team and play here. Like I said, I've gotten everything I wanted, but being a Steeler for life was dear to me. I felt like by me going to another team, I wouldn't give the same passion or have that desire to put on another uniform, and I wouldn't be true to myself or fair to an organization, not giving them the true Hines Ward out on the football field. But 14 years a blessing, man. I'm very blessed. I'm fortunate enough to win a Super Bowl because that's why we play this game. And I was fortunate enough to win two, played in three, and I've gotten, like I said, I've gotten everything I wanted out of playing in the NFL.
If you had to play for another team, though, and you were still playing,
see,
and you had to pick another team.
That's why you're my floor. You always put me in this position. If I couldn't
Who
even
would
tell
it be?
You that.
It the Ravens?
It wouldn't be in. No, it definitely wouldn't be the
Ravens. You wouldn't have, if you wanted to keep playing and the Steelers said, sorry, we don't want you, but you want to keep playing, you wouldn't have said, I'm going to the Ravens like Brett Favre wanted to go to the Vikings?
No, I wouldn't do that. Still an issue. I wouldn't do that. My heart and soul wouldn't be, just because the hatred I had towards the Baltimore Ravens, that organization. I couldn't fathom putting on purple and black.
They still love you in Baltimore, don't they?
No, they don't.
Do you still bring your own food when you go to Baltimore?
Yeah, I bring a little lunch budget. Make sure nobody spits in the sandwich and whatnot. But you got to love that rivalry. That's what it's all about.
Oh, it's one of the great rivalries in all of sports.
Correct.
And, I mean, the Ravens have only been around for 16, 17 years now. He's Hines Ward, Super Bowl 40 MVP. Here wearing his Super Bowl 43 ring, and he better not set it down anywhere. It's going to be gone. Quickly, ever misplaced either of your rings?
No, never. I keep them in a little – I got a nice little place at home where I have my two Super Bowl rings, a Super Bowl MVP trophy, and my Dancing with the Stars trophy. That was kind of a nice little trophy montage of my whole career, and just happy to have it. And like I said, very blessed to be in a position to have an opportunity to win a Super Bowl.
When did you win Dancing with the Stars?
Oh man, 2009.
What do they give you? What's the trophy?
A mirror ball, a big mirror ball trophy. That thing's heavy. It's heavier than the Lombardi trophy that I have, the replica that I have, and my Super Bowl MVP trophy, which when I won, I slept with that thing every day. I laid in bed. I put a blanket over it, made sure the pillow was under his head. And I put it on the breakfast table. I ate breakfast with it. I put the seatbelt on in the car. Like, I mean, it was a dream come true, man. You got to think. I grew up watching the Super Bowl, every Super Bowl. And every Super Bowl MVP, I tried to emulate them at recess the next day at school. I remember Doug Williams had a – He was named MVP. I had a blank T-shirt. I had a marker. I drew number 17, put Williams on the back. And at recess, I was throwing the ball. I didn't want to run the ball in. I wanted to just keep throwing touchdown passes. And when I was named MVP, I sat on the podium and found myself daydreaming a little bit in the midst of the smoke and the confetti. And I was wondering if there was going to be a kid that wanted to be Hines Ward the next day during the recess. And that was something, it was almost surreal that I'm living my childhood dream and being named MVP.
Well, that's great stuff. And yeah. He is Hines Ward, Super Bowl 40 MVP. What was it like the night before a Super Bowl?
I couldn't sleep. I mean, literally, like, just sitting there, and I remember looking over at the clock, and it was 2:30 in the morning. Looking over, it's 2:35 in the morning. It's 2:40.
Was it ever earlier? Do you ever do that where it's like, wait a minute, last time it's 2:35, now it's 2:20?
I figure I watch a movie, and usually when I watch a movie, I normally just fall asleep. But just going over the plays, trying to analyze every single move. If they play cover two, I'm going to do this. If they play cover three, if they play man-to-man, this is how I'm going to run the route. Literally every single play just going over my mind. And I think that hurt me. Because I think for a lot of young guys, when you try to do too much in the Super Bowl, you end up hurting yourself by making a mistake. You know, trying to compensate for something. I want to do this, rather than just continue to play football, continue to do the things that's gotten you to that point. You know, I put more pressure on myself to do everything perfect. So I remember the first opportunity, it was a routine catch. You catch it, you drag a foot. But I was thinking about getting my feet inbound, instead of catching a football, I had to drop. And when you're playing in the Super Bowl, you can't have a my bad or a my mistake, because your opportunity, you may not get another opportunity. Mm-hmm. Luckily for me, I got another opportunity. I redeemed myself and went on to win Super Bowl MVP.
He's Hines Ward, Super Bowl 40 MVP, now a member of the NBC Football Night in America crew. That long halftime in the Super Bowl, how hard is that of an adjustment? Because you got 12-minute halftime, and then Super Bowl, wow, what is it, 20, 25 minutes?
Yeah.
What happens to the body when you've got that long of a break?
Oh, man, it gets cold. You start to get stiff. You're starting to stiffen up. So you saw guys going through a workout routine. We had weights. We had ellipticals. You know, just trying to – for me, I took a shower. In the first Super Bowl, it was 40. I took a shower and got dressed back up like I was going out for a game and got retaped and everything. Yeah, but trying to stay warm through a long halftime is just – it's something that you're not used to. And I think that's the biggest adjustment, is how you handle the halftime preparation to stay warm and stay lubed up and stuff like that to get back on the field and still go out there and produce in the second half.
And that Super Bowl win came in Detroit. One of the big stories that week, Jerome Bettis, Detroit native, capping off his career with that Super Bowl win. Why isn't he in the Hall of Fame yet?
I have no idea. I don't know what the criteria is to make it to Hall of Fame. You know, I know they say 3.9 yards per catch or average or whatever yards per run. But in the latter part of his career, that was his role, to be a short yard. Even if it's third and one, we put Jerome in and we converted. He almost 100% on every conversion that we put him in. So technically your stats are going to drop. Now, I don't know if it's based on stats that get you into the Hall of Fame, but what he did and the production that he had throughout his career, he's a Hall of Famer in my book. And what to be able to be his size and be able to have quick feet and getting in and out of the holes, running over guys. I look at him running over Urlacher. That was a significant play for us.
In 05.
In 05.
You guys were done. You had lost. Yes. Cincinnati came in and beat you in
Correct.
Pittsburgh.
And we had to win
the
last four
it's
games.
It's over, and you guys caught
and
five.
And it started with that Chicago game when he came off the bench because his role, he wasn't a starter anymore. That gave us inspiration. If Jerome, our leader, can do it and play the selfless role, then anyone can go out there and do it. And when he ran over Urlacher and we ended up beating Chicago, we kind of went on the run. And once we got in the postseason, there was no stopping us.
Well, Jerome will find out whether or not he gets in this Saturday.
Got my fingers crossed, man.
In a couple of years ago, or a couple of years from now, rather.
I don't know, man. That's...
Well, you didn't let me finish a question.
I know where you're going with this.
Where am I going?
Because you're my, I don't know.
Is Randy Moss getting in the Hall of Fame in 2 years? That's where I'm asking. No.
He is.
Is Hines Ward getting in the Hall of Fame?
I don't know. I don't know. I statistically.
Isn't 10,000 yards enough?
But it's not just what you did in the regular season.
Isn't a Super Bowl MVP enough?
I don't know. You tell me. I should be asking you.
I don't have one of the votes. Nobody listens to me.
Do you think I'm a Hall of
Famer? Yes, I think you're a Hall of Famer.
You're just saying that because I'm your colleague.
Yes.
You're not going to say no.
I would tell you. I would tell you. Look, I'm influenced by all the 86 jerseys I see. How can you not put a guy in the Hall of Fame who sold 10 million 86 jerseys?
Well, you know what? Just to have my name in the same sentence with Lynn Swann and Stallworth, two Hall of Famers who epitomize what the Pittsburgh Steelers wide receivers were all about making plays when the opportunity presents itself. They made plays in the Super Bowl when it matters the most. I did that. And so what I've done in the postseason as well as the regular season, I'm right up there with some of the best who's ever played the game. So I don't know. I can't really make a resume for myself. It's just glad to have my name mentioned in the Hall of Fame because I never would have thought a third rounder from University of Georgia, playing special teams my third year.
Without an ACL.
Yeah, without an ACL. Nothing was ever given to me, man, so I had to earn everything. So to sit there and look back and reflect on 14 years and the run that I had in Pittsburgh, that's all I can ask for.
Well, all I can ask for is having the opportunity to hang out with someone like you. It really has been great. I mean,
yeah,
where
cool,
I'm from,
man.
This guy's a legend, and
he is so down
to earth. And I can bust his chops and tell him he's not getting in the Hall of Fame.
Well, I don't have a three-hour radio TV.
You want it? I'll give it to you.
No. I don't want it. I love being a guest on your show.
We'll be back with more PFT Live on NBC Sports Radio. He's Hines Ward. Thanks, Hines.
You're listening to Pro Football Talk Live, broadcasting live from the Super Bowl's Radio Row in Phoenix, Arizona.
On NBC Sports Radio.
Now, back to Mike Florio.
Welcome back to Pro Football Talk Live on NBC Sports Radio. And just a reminder, you can listen and vote for your favorite Westwood One Super Bowl commercial before the big game even begins. Go to thesoundawards.com. That's thesoundawards.com. Voting is open now. Welcome back to the program. And we had a lot of guests lined up, but I ran into Greg Olson on Radio Row. I said, Greg, let's get you on the show. Greg said, we'll see if we can. And as you can tell, he's here. Greg Olson, Carolina Panthers, Pro Bowl tight end. First trip to the Pro Bowl, well-deserved. What did you think of the experience?
It was an awesome experience. It's everything you'd hoped for. It's everything you kind of looked forward to. To finally make it after 8 years was a tremendous honor. The week was awesome. Did a lot of good stuff. Had the family out here. Met a lot of great guys, great people, their families. It was just an awesome experience. And the game itself was a blast. We had fun playing out there. You're having, you know, not a ton on the line. You're just able to enjoy it for what it is. A
couple of touchdowns scored as well. And what's the intensity like of the game? Because you got a bunch of guys, they're healthy. It's the end of the season. You don't want to spend the next 3 months rehabbing an injury.
That's the last thing you want. You make it through the whole season, playoffs, all that, and then you get hurt in the Pro Bowl. So the first quarter or so, guys were kind of feeling their way through. It wasn't real intense. But that last drive for us, we were down by four. We got the ball back to go the length of the field to win. We were playing pretty hard. The guys were trying to win, and they were trying to stop us.
What's the difference between the losing team and the winning team, what you make?
Almost 30 grand.
So there's incentive there.
It's a significant pay increase. Covers flying all your friends and family out for the game.
How many people did you bring out for the game?
I was only responsible for my immediate family and our parents and my brother, but I had extended family, everybody fly out. We had like I had to get 25 tickets.
And a great atmosphere. Awesome. Full stadium.
Oh, my God. We ran out for player introductions. It was packed, 68,000 people. I said, man, this feels like I'm about to play the Super Bowl. I mean, there was flyovers, the environment, everyone was cheering. It was fun. It was a great experience.
He's Greg Olsen, Pro Bowl tight end of the Carolina Panthers, formerly the Chicago Bears. Here on PFT Live. What do you think of those uniforms for the Pro Bowl? They got to work on those uniforms.
They're a little, the colors are a little bright, but you know what? That's what it is. It's fun. They get to introduce the new color schemes. The uniforms are different than when you're watching the Pro Bowl, you know you're watching the Pro Bowl. You know, it's nothing like you'd see during the season.
Do you like this new fantasy draft format, or would you prefer the AFC-NFC?
You know, I think it makes it fun. I think mixing and matching the guys from the same team, playing on different conferences. The problem is you hope that you're not, you know, where the stress was going in, you say, I hope I get drafted. I hope I'm not the last guy kicked. You know, here you are making the Pro Bowl, and next thing you know, you're stressing out about whether or not you're going to get picked or not. But fortunately,
who was the last guy picked?
I don't even know. Fortunately, it wasn't me.
He's Greg Olsen, Panthers tight end. You guys had a great season that didn't start so great. But boy, you really found the gas pedal in December. What was it that caused what was a very bad season to turn around and allow you to get to the postseason?
You know, we just kind of became true to what we were, what we are, and we were kind of searching for that. We had some injuries. We had guys in and out of the lineup. We couldn't really, you know, dial in exactly what we needed to be because of a lot of different situations going on. You know, obviously Cam being injured, and then right as we got things turned around against New Orleans down there, we had a great game, scored 40 points, shut him down. Then he gets in the wreck and things. So it was just one of those years. You know, we just couldn't keep things consistent. We had a lot going on. I think it says a lot about, you know, our coaching staff, Coach Rivera, down to the players, that we're able to kind of keep things true, keep things going, and come out the other end and get a playoff win.
Two straight division titles, two straight division round appearances. What needs to happen in 2015 to get another division title and maybe go a step or two farther?
Yeah, we just need to continue to build on what we did these last couple of years. We have a lot of young guys. We're kind of infused with some young talent this year, especially offensively. We had, you know, two rookie guards, two rookie wide receivers, obviously Kelvin being our first round pick. So just as those guys continue to develop, we don't have a very old team. We have some young, fresh faces. And as those guys continue to get better, I think we'll continue to improve.
He's Greg Olsen, Panthers tight end. You mentioned Kelvin Benjamin. What was your impression of him overall?
I mean, for what he did coming in as a rookie, that was really thrust into having to be the number one receiver, you know, with losing Steve and LaFell. And we lost our top four receivers from last year, from the year before. For Kelvin to come in as a first-round pick and have the pressure and the amount that was thrown on him, you know, to go over 1,000 yards, and what was 9 touchdowns or whatever it was, he was everything we hoped he would be, and the sky's the limit. He's just scratching the surface for what he's going to be in this league, and, you know, he was just phenomenal for us.
How odd was it to go forward without Steve Smith on the team?
It was. You know, it was tough. You know, it was kind of an interesting little deal there. It's kind of the nature of our business. It's never easy leaving your, you know, moving on from your franchise, face of your franchise for years. You know, a lot of teams have gone through it. It's just the reality of the NFL. And it was a decision that was made, and we had to move forward. And, you know, worked out for him. He made the playoffs. He had another tremendous year, not surprising, and for us to make the playoffs too. So I think it worked out for everybody.
He's Greg Olsen, Panthers tight end, Pro Bowler, and you're here today at Radio Row at the Super Bowl on behalf of Old Spice. Tell us what you have going on with them.
Happy to hear that you're as like me.
I use Old Spice all the time.
As do I, so it just made sense. And
I don't get paid to use it, though.
No,
you do.
True. But it's been fun. You know, it's been cool to work with them. Like we were talking before the show started about their, you know, their commercials are easy to remember. So they're coming out with their fresher collection, and it's kind of, as you can tell from my shirt, one of them's called Timber, a little more, you know, natural type scents and stuff like that. And it's cool. It's a fun brand. It's great to be a part of. They're launching their new scents here in the next couple weeks. And just to be out here on their behalf and get to talk about the Super Bowl and talk about the game, it's been a great week.
Do they have a new Super Bowl commercial coming?
I don't think they're on, at their YouTube channel. They have some new spots that people can go check out and some fun stuff that they've done.
So, Greg Olsen, how many years now? 8 years in the NFL?
They just finished 8.
How many more you think you're going to play?
I think I have a good amount. I think I got 4 or 5 more left in me, good ones. I'm pretty healthy. I feel good. I feel like I'm continuing each year to get better, becoming more productive each year. I think we got a good thing going in Carolina, so I'm anxious to be a part of it. I'm excited to be a part of it, and we'll see. It will take it 1 year at a time.
Beyond winning a Super Bowl, what's your top goal?
You know, I think from an individual standpoint, I think I've achieved a lot of my individual goals. I think the biggest thing right now would be to win that Super Bowl, to play for a team that's preparing this week. All that goes into it is everyone's ultimate dream. And from an individual standpoint, just to continue to be productive. That's kind of been my thing my whole career, is just to be consistent. I may not be the flashiest guy and the guy out there doing all the dances and all the attention-seeking stuff. That's just not my thing. I try to go out and be reliable, play every game, play every snap, and let my production speak for itself.
You guys played the Patriots in 2013. You've played the Seahawks three times since 2013. What's your just rough take on the two teams that are going to be matched up on Sunday?
I think it's going to be a good matchup. I think for the pressure that the Seattle defense puts on you with their athleticism and their speed and their toughness, I think matches up well with New England. I think New England has the type of offense with their timing and rhythm, getting the ball out of Brady's hand. You don't want to sit back there waiting for things to develop because they'll get after you up front and they'll make your life tough. I think with Gronkowski, I think is a matchup that there will be some opportunities. I think it's going to come down to how do they score in the red zone. Seattle was a big reason they beat us the last couple of times was we would move the ball well and we would just settle for too many field goals. So if New England can find a way to punch the ball in and move the ball and then score turnover and not turn the ball over, I think they're going to do well.
Well, Greg, thanks so much for including us. I'll keep wearing my Old Spice. Great. And maybe one day I'll get paid for it too. He's Greg Olson, PFT Live and NBC Sports Radio.
Great. Thanks, Mike.